Hello and welcome to another episode of the CG Garage. This is episode number 34 featuring Fausto De Martini, which is one of the most fabulous names out there. And we'll talk a little about him. Before we get started, we have a special guest with us today. Madison is here. Hello, Madison.
Hello.
Madison has been helping us today. And what have you been doing, Madison?
I have been putting stickers on the Google goggles.
Google Cardboard.
Cardboard.
Cardboard, yes. And we have, how many did you put on?
Well, over like 200.
over 200 cardboards, which we'll be giving out this week or next week at SIGGRAPH. So for those of you that are coming to SIGGRAPH, you will be enjoying all of Madison's hard labor. So please do that. And for those of you who haven't gone to register for our V-Ray days, please do that. You can go to SIGGRAPH2015.chaosgroup.com. And please register there to attend some of the V-Ray Days events. So Fausto is a really interesting guy. I met him when I went to go visit him at Lightstorm, and he's been working on the concept art for the new Avatar sequels, and he'll be doing that for probably quite a bit longer. His history is really interesting about how he got into concept art and what he does there. There was actually a request. Someone on Twitter told us that they wanted to hear Fausto on the podcast. So I said, why don't I just email him? Why don't you come on there? So anyway, hope you enjoy it. Madison, how have you been enjoying Los Angeles this summer?
It's been good.
It's been good. You like the weather?
Yes.
Yeah. Where are you from? Where are you from originally?
East Coast.
East Coast? We're on the East Coast.
Delaware.
Yeah, that's, you know, and here's an interesting fact about Delaware. Delaware is the state with the lowest highest elevation. I think it's 65 feet. Or something like that, or 165 feet. I don't know why I know that. Yeah. All right, guys. Hope you enjoy it. Bye.
Welcome to another CG Garage, where the Chaos Group talks. You'll know it's over when the last bucket drops. We're gonna fire off rays in high dynamic range. We know that ambient occlusion is passé. Global illumination won't lead you astray. And while image-based lighting is really swell, you need to make sure everything has Fresnel.
You know, it was funny because someone just told, like literally this week, someone said, hey, I'd love to hear some podcasts from Fausto specifically. They
nice.
Asked for you.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and
I'm so honored.
I said, okay, great. I was like, well, I have his email. I'll just email him. And you're like, yeah, I'm available this week. It's like, perfect, because next week I'm slammed.
Yeah.
So I said, let's just do it now, because there's always two things like, oh, you can do it later when you're like, don't have time. It's like, let me do it now because I know I have time.
You know, I think it's great. Just get it, you know, just get it done. And
get
especially if SIGGRAPH coming up.
I know. Yeah. Exactly.
But I'm very happy that people requested. So
yeah,
very honored.
It's cool. And, you know, in fact, I've wanted to have a bunch of you guys that are working over there at, you know, obviously I wanted to have Ben on here and David and stuff.
Yeah.
So eventually I get them, but it's like, you are available right now and it's great. And I've, you know, I've always admired your work, and it was really cool to see that, and specifically people wanted to hear this, and so it was like perfect. It's a
That's
perfect
great.
Opportunity. It's very different talking to concept artists, because that's something I actually want to cover with you a little bit in terms of making the idea from being a production artist to a concept artist.
Yeah.
It's a little bit unusual.
Yeah.
But before we even get to that, let's talk a little bit about your history. So Where did your interest in CG start to happen?
Yeah, well, I think it's the story is pretty similar to most artists, right? Like, since I was a kid, I loved to draw, and I was always attracted to like creating designs like with clay, and I was always drawing on the paper. And as I grew up, I kept doing it like as much as I could, like drawing in my spare time. And when I got around to choose what kind of college I'll do in Brazil, I didn't have much of a choice. So, and I had no idea about computer graphics and like that. That it could be done at home and things like that.
Sure.
And softwares like Lightwave or 3ds Max, I was not aware of them. So essentially I chose to do marketing and advertisement. And then I went to college for that. And on the second year, I met a guy, and we I went to do a it's not so much like being an editor. I was just like helping him write articles for a game magazine where you do trials and write articles about it.
Yeah.
And what ended up happening is I end up is that okay now?
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah.
It's good.
So what happened is I came across a guy that was doing the media for the magazine, and he did a whole intro using 3D. And okay. he did a car like in a road and with the logo of the publisher.
Sure.
And when I saw that, I was just like, how did you do that? And he's like, oh, I use 3ds Max. So I was like very impressed. Like, and I asked like,
what year was this approximately?
Jesus. It was like 90. Let me see. Yeah, I think it was like 97, 98.
Okay.
It was like, yeah.
Or so Max 1 was probably just starting at that point.
Yeah, I think it could be a little, a couple of years later. I know that the Max version that I started to play with was 2.0. Essentially, so okay. probably it's like 99 maybe, you know.
Gotcha.
Yeah, but what ended up happening is like I saw what the guy did, and this guy was also a programmer, so I talked to him. Man, let's do like a small video game, you know, like an indie project.
Mm-hmm.
And then I can do the designs of everything, and then you can kind of create that in the computer. And he said, no, I think that's too much. I can do the programming. Why don't you learn 3D?
Sure.
To help me. And that's how I started. You know, I start playing with Max. That's the software he was using. And
yep.
then I just fell in love with 3D. And just, you know, as soon as I start playing with it, I felt that's exactly what I wanted to do for my life.
Right.
And from there, I started doing some classes because there was no, like, by the that time, there was no colleges in Brazil doing a degree for
computer
graphics.
There was no colleges
graphics.
Anywhere in the world doing that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Back in the early 90s, it was like,
yeah.
you kind of had to fend for yourself, right?
I believe so. I think they did have some probably in
No, they did. They did have computer graphics classes, but not like... You want to be an artist, right? So it was mostly the science of computer graphics
gotcha.
And not necessarily the artist's
part
of it.
Yeah, for sure. And but to me, that's exactly what I wanted to do. And it was kind of conflicting because I was going to college studying marketing and advertisement, but all my passion was Towers 3D. So I ended up like getting an internship in a small company. And as soon as I started doing an internship, it got in a way of going to college. At some point, I dropped college and started focusing on computer graphics as a freelance. So long story short, I started working in advertisement as an artist, like, you know, for small commercials and things like that.
Where is this in Brazil?
That was in São Paulo.
In São Paulo,
yeah.
Okay.
And at some point, I ended up working on the largest... how can I call that? Like effects houses they have for commercials there.
Okay.
Yeah, and so they it's pretty large shops. Like they have one, it's called Vitor Zero, which is a pretty large one, very well known in South America, and they do beautiful work. And another one is called Casablanca, which is another big place. And working in places like that, so that was kind of my background, but my passion was working in entertainment. That's what my goal was, right?
Okay.
And very difficult to do that in down in Brazil because the focus there was more creating CG for advertisement.
Sure.
So on my spare time, I was always working on my portfolio.
Gotcha.
I became a big fan of Blizzard because I saw the StarCraft.
But you obviously had a game background.
Yeah.
Like passion.
Oh yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
I was very fortunate that my brother, he started working in computer companies when he was 14 years old.
Oh, wow.
14, 15.
What's your brother do now?
He is working as a consultant from a company. He is no longer in this field, but it's like...
But 14 years old, he was working in computer games, right?
In computer companies like Hewlett Packard and things like that.
Oh, really?
So
what was
he
doing at 14 at Hewlett Packard?
Well, he was just looking at internships and things like that.
So you've always been around computers and all that passion.
I was very fortunate because he brought the first PC.
And how old
PC.
Is he? Is he older than you? Or
he's
younger?
Older than me. No,
oh, okay.
Yeah.
So you've been driven by that.
Exactly, yeah. But he was always bringing those computers. Like he brought the first Apple... And the first PC, you know, he brought all those computers, and I saw the evolution. But I was always asking him, "Does he have a game?" And right. So I was always playing games in it.
Yep.
So I you know, I was very fortunate that I kind of had that sort of surrounding, you know,
sure.
which is a big thing for an artist, I think, like, you know,
absolutely.
The way that you're raised and what kind of things you're seeing around you. So in that sense, I was always super fortunate. But at the end of the day, when I was in advertisement, trying to you know, see what I could do, like develop my portfolio, I was always looking at the work that Blizzard did.
Yep.
And I fell in love when I saw the StarCraft cinematics back in the day.
Yep.
And so I kind of always had that in my head. It's like, okay, if I want to try out there, I'm definitely going to try to work for Blizzard first.
Mm-hmm.
And what ended up happening, I started doing this character on my spare time. And it was inspired on a Space Marine. But it was like a light version of the Space Marine and from the StarCraft game.
Right.
And
so you were always sort of inspired by the sci-fi side of things.
Yes, absolutely.
Not the fantasy as much as the sci-fi.
Well, I mean, I was...
And I know this because of your artwork.
I know.
Your artwork is very sci-fi.
Yeah. No, I tend to do way more, the sci-fi, high-tech type of designs, mm-hmm. for sure. I think it's kind of clear on my work. I really like creatures. I love creature design as well.
Yeah, as long as it's aliens.
Yeah, as long as it's aliens. Exactly. But I haven't devoted so much of my like personal time and personal portfolio to fantasy. I had an opportunity to work with fantasy when I worked on Diablo cinematics.
Oh, right.
Back in Blizzard, but not really. Like, if I will go home, rarely I'll be doing like an armor or something like that.
No, but like you like the mech.
Yes,
there's
absolutely.
There's a beauty to the way that you sort of look at the mech and you think of the engineering of it, right?
Thank you.
That's the kind of the idea, is that as opposed to armor, which is very sculpted and ornate, this is about the functionality.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, I appreciate it. Thank you. Thanks. I'm really glad you liked what I do, but for sure, this is one of my focuses to make things that are pushed in the design, but it looks like it can work.
It's functional, right?
It's exactly. Functional as much as possible. I take some liberties a lot of times just to make things a little more pushed, to have a more memorable design or silhouette, but always trying to keep that in mind.
Exactly.
So it's very important. But
so how did that opportunity happen? So obviously you ended up working at Blizzard, but how did that opportunity happen?
So I was developing this personal character on my spare time. So I was working in Brazil, and like my shift would end like 8 p.m. or 9 p.m. and from 9 to midnight or 2 a.m. or something, I will be constantly working on that character. My idea was to do a full model and rig and do an animation, because this is the reality in Brazil is not really like a segmented pipeline most of the time.
No, you have to do all
you are a generalist.
You are a generalist. Yep.
For the most part.
Yep.
There are companies, I think Vitor Zero, as I mentioned, I think they're larger and they can have a little more specialists in some areas, but mm-hmm. for the most part, all the other shops, they have the generalists. So I want to do the whole thing and rig and doing the animation, but it was a big project, and I end up like having to do a lot of crunch time, and the model was not going anywhere because I didn't have a chance to work on it.
Okay.
So my friend saw what I was doing, and he suggested, man, why don't you post this on CG channel? Or CG Talk back in the day.
Right.
And I was completely disconnected from forums. It was like early, you know, in mm-hmm. this when this whole forum stuff started. I was not really present. And he helped me to post and type, and it was really cool. But that was on a Friday. And when it was on the Saturday, my friend called me from São Paulo and said, hey, man, you should take a look at those websites that you posted. They end up like plugging the Marine in the front page.
Right.
So that got a lot of attention. And when I opened my email, there was like job offers from companies I cannot believe, because imagine that something like that would happen.
And I think that's an important thing for people to know. Let's say, what year was this? About like early 2000s?
Yes.
Okay. So people shouldn't realize that if you do great work, and you put it out on the internet,
mm-hmm.
and anyone can do that. Anyone can go to CG Channel or CG Talk, or whatever,
absolutely,
and post your work up there.
Yeah,
And if it's good, and that's a big if, because there's a lot of people out there.
Yeah.
So don't be intimidated, but everyone has a chance.
Absolutely.
Right?
Oh, absolutely.
And so you did that, and it's like, you didn't even realize, like, I'm good enough. I don't know if I'm good enough, whatever. And suddenly, like, oh my God, you don't even know. That's the other problem that a lot of people, they're like, I don't know if I'm good enough to do that. No one knows.
Yeah, absolutely. I think as artists, we always have that kind of, our existence is based on the fact that you're always on yourself and you're always looking at your
that's
work.
That's the only thing that's going to make you better.
Exactly. You know, and it's a blessing, it's a curse. You know, like, well, we always talk about that, but for sure that I would never imagine anything, you know, like similar to what happened, that it could be a reality in my life.
Know.
And when I saw that, I got, like, you know, emotional, because, like, I cannot believe it. This is
right.
a dream
and
of mine.
Suddenly, I'm just putting this stuff out on the internet, and people saying would like to give you a job.
Absolutely, yeah. So it was incredible, and you know, like, Blizzard ended up getting contact with me eventually, and I talked to them, and those guys are fantastic. You
and
know?
That was your job. That was your dream job.
That
right?
was my dream job. Yeah, absolutely. And you know, it was fantastic, and I ended up flying to the United States for an interview.
Uh-huh.
And the whole thing was pretty shocking, because I was living this reality of a lot of hard work and, you know, and working on advertisement in Brazil. And all of a sudden, I'm flying here for an interview. So it was like, this is a lot of things at the same time. So it was pretty scary, but amazing at the same time. So I believe how the whole thing started when I moved down here and started working there.
Well, what's the first project you worked on there?
World of Warcraft.
Okay.
Yes.
Great. Famous game.
A famous game.
Yeah.
A little bit.
A lot of people have used that.
Absolutely.
That game.
Yeah.
Well, that was cool. And what did you work on there? Were you doing cinematics, or were you doing game development? Or
No. It was mostly cinematics.
Which is interesting, because I think at the time, cinematics was still a little bit of a weird thing, right? And Blizzard was the place that did cinematics back then. Now everyone does cinematics.
Yeah.
But Blizzard was the one who's like, we're going to make something special about this video game, that it's not Donkey Kong, it's not this.
Yeah.
It's a story with drama.
That's what I think that it was the most attractive thing to me, is like, since I watched the first cinematics from Blizzard, I was very impressed with the maturity of it.
Mm-hmm.
How the storytelling was so strong.
Yeah.
When I watched that, the Diablo, the Diablo cinematics with the old man in a crazy in a nut house.
Yes.
That was so powerful, and it's like it was taking to another level of how serious it was. So I was always very attracted to that, you know, to that part.
Well, it was very interesting to me, because that specific game, Diablo, I remember. I played a version, although I'm probably sure that Blizzard would never admit that, but there was a version of that game that was called Moria that existed on an old-fashioned computer, mainframe computer that was all text-based, like little ASCII characters.
That's awesome.
And you would go into a dungeon and you would kill characters just like in Diablo.
That's pretty interesting.
And I played that in college. Now, this is a long, long time ago. And Moria is obviously based on The Lord of the Rings and all that stuff. But I was playing this thing. It was like, I'm going down a dungeon. I'm killing all these characters. And it was, and so I love that game. I loved it. And then, obviously, I graduated college. And, I never played that game again. And then suddenly, like, Diablo came along. It's like, it's like Moria, but with graphics. And then they introduced the whole level of story. And I was like,
Yeah.
And I wasn't that was it. It was like, I think to me, in a lot of ways, and I'm not I play a lot more fantasy games than I play sci-fi games.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't play that many games, to be honest, even at all. But there's something about the way that they introduce characters and story and the way that the cinematic sets it up.
It's very powerful.
It's very powerful.
Yeah.
And Blizzard kind of really knew that at the time. It was like, you know, they did some amazing stuff. What was the one they did? Was it Blizzard that did the one with the crow that took off?
Yeah. Was for Warcraft.
Warcraft, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I actually won.
Who was the artist who did the crow? Because I know that artist and I can't remember his name. I haven't talked to him in a long time.
Yes,
And he worked over at Blur for a while too.
Yeah, I know exactly who you're talking about. The name escaped me as well. But John Chauffant.
John Chauffant, that's right.
Yes.
Exactly who it
is. I haven't talked to him in a long time. As well.
Okay, John, if you're listening to this, please contact me.
Exactly. Yeah, I was, when I joined Blueser, he was no longer there. But when I met him, I told him, like,
The Crow was amazing.
It's
I saw
amazing.
That Crow animation.
Yeah, he's incredible talent. Yeah. So, yeah, when I met him, it's like, dude, that Crow was fantastic.
The Crow was beautiful. Yeah. I was like, oh. And, you know, that was that Warcraft was like, okay, I get it.
Absolutely. No, I think when it start working there, like, I start meeting all my heroes, you know, because like, oh, you work on that shot. One shot that was amazing, it was, I remember when Arthas came and, you know, the Warcraft cinematics, and he put the sword on the ground, and you have this camera going up the sword.
Yep.
It was a beautiful shot. And I finally met Jeff Chamberlain that worked on it. And I told him, like, dude, I would play the shot over and over and over. Like, that was gorgeous. You know, such amazing work. And
so Blizzard has always maintained. I mean, you worked at Blizzard, what, for nine
years, yeah.
9 years, so a long time, mm-hmm. right? And you were always involved in the cinematic group. And the cinematic group itself was pretty big.
Eventually got big, because of the amount of projects and things like that.
And so there's some big projects, and they dedicate a lot of time and money to it because they knew the value that it had to the game.
Absolutely,
right?
They really invest in that department. You know, it's a huge part of Blizzard, as far as I know. You know,
right.
Still is, and it was why it was there. So they understand the importance of
the department. And it should be important to know that also the. For those who may not necessarily realize that the cinematic group, especially at that time, and even to some extent today, is not a real time group, right?
No.
It was
pre-rendered.
It's pre-rendered and, you know, made like any kind of animation pipeline.
Yes, exactly.
You're making a movie, basically.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's essentially it's a production pipeline. Just
and
like,
it's not like the and this was, you know, early 2000s. This wasn't Pixar. This was full on as photoreal and characters as possible.
Absolutely.
That was kind of cutting edge, really.
Yeah, and it's all hand animated as well.
Hand animated, This was before a lot of motion capture.
But I don't think they ever used.
No.
So it was all like, you know, the animation supervisor was always very adamant about using hand animation, and I'm not sure if anything changed. Like, I haven't talked to them in a while, but. Why I was there was everything was pre-handcrafted. It was pretty fantastic.
And so you mentioned it when you were in Brazil, you basically had to do a bunch of things yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you moved over to Blizzard, did you specialize in certain areas? Was there departments you
put
into?
Yeah, it was mostly modeling. Yeah.
Modeling, okay.
Yeah.
So concept stuff as well, right?
Well,
Did you design a lot of the characters? And
since the department was small when I joined, I had the opportunity to work on some pretty cool projects. For example, the StarCraft Marine armor for the Building a Better Marine teaser. You see that whole armor being assembled.
Sure.
So I end up actually designing with the concept artists a lot of parts. And of course, my buddy Joe Peterson, amazing concept artist, he worked on the design with Nick Carpenter, and Nick was the director and art directing everything.
Gotcha.
So essentially, they worked on that concept, and when I start modeling, my model was like one-to-one to his concept, but when he came down to all the moving parts. And little things that would happen with the armor as it was getting assembled, that was more up to me to design that. So, and his rifle, I did the concept for it.
Okay.
So I had the freedom to actually design.
So that was
just
sort of introduction to, like, you're going to start designing your own.
Absolutely.
Things.
Yeah. I was never really conscious about that's exactly what I love doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But having the opportunity on that project to do that.
Right.
And then getting later involved in more production.
Gotcha.
I always kind of felt that, like, oh man, but I really love that part of it. And when I was going home, I was designing my own creatures and own characters. So, yeah, eventually it was clear to me that that's what I wanted to do.
Gotcha.
And I felt that I had potential to be good at it. You know,
right.
Which is an important part of it.
I mean, that
do you feel that this is something like, this is what I want to do? Or does you're just like, well, I'm at Blizzard and this is great. And they're like, oh, great. And now suddenly I'm going to start designing. I mean, did you fall into it? Or do you feel like that's what you always wanted to do?
I think it was more like a natural progression. But talking to other artists and friends, I think there's always this kind of progression and evolution.
Yes.
You know, it's like I think you start seeing a couple of things. First, your dream is very broad. I want to work in games. And then you work in games. It's like, oh, no, I want to work in this section of the game. And then you start getting more and more. You start narrowing down what you really want to do.
Right.
So I believe that's what ended up happening.
Yeah, I never thought I was like, I'm going to be focused on CG lighting. I never thought that in my life.
Yeah, right? Exactly. So all of a sudden you find this passion, and you know, and somehow, you know, you discover that's you have some good skills for it, and then and that's what you love doing. And I am a huge believer that everything you love doing, I think you're gonna become good at it because you put all your effort in, and it, like, you're thinking about on your spare time. So I believe it goes hand in hand.
Yeah, it's a really interesting sort of idea of, you know, what it takes to be that kind of artist, where you say you always have to leave the door open a little bit, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And learn from everyone you did, like, just like the artist you were working with, is like, he was designing it, but you were closely with that person, and suddenly you started to realize the opportunities that were available to you.
Yeah.
Because that person left the door open. It's like, I designed this much, but eventually we're going to have to figure out something here, so why don't you take care of that?
Absolutely. And I was very grateful because Nick, it was awesome to let me take care of that. You know, he knew my passion about designing, modeling, mechanical stuff, and he used that as you know, it's like, okay, he used my passion to build sections of that, and he was, of course, like, very close to the whole process, doing a fantastic job of, like, setting up all the cameras and everything. So it was a very small team that I started that whole Building a Better Marine teaser. You know?
Okay.
So it was 25 people back then, I think.
Okay.
And then eventually the company, the department grew, but the department that I started was very small.
So. And what were the tools you were using back then? Were you still using
it Max? It was 3ds Max, and I believe that it was Brazil.
Brazil, yeah.
Back then,
They used Brazil a lot at Blizzard, I think.
Until they switched to RenderMan.
They switched to RenderMan later, but then I guess they had to move everything to Maya at that point, right?
Yeah, most of the pipeline, I believe, was moved to Maya.
Right.
I think the modeling department kept modeling tools like 3ds Max, and they had a couple licenses of XSI back in the day. But I don't think they love talking about tools they use.
It shouldn't be. I mean, the tools are really always, you know, the tools, right? I mean, a hammer is a hammer. If it's
absolutely
a different kind of hammer,
yeah,
it doesn't matter. But anyway, I was just curious because I remember they were like, they went through the whole process, and I know that they went to a RenderMan Maya pipeline, which seemed RenderMan Maya seems unusual for a gaming company. That's just the only thing, is like, right? Because they were a cinematic group, and so I think they started to get more and more involved in, like, we're going to use the same tools at the time that were used in movies, right?
Yeah.
And movies now, like, you can't find two movies that use the same tools anymore.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not like, it's not the Maya RenderMan anymore. Right now, the tools are like, it's going to be
Arnold, V-Ray.
Maya, Max, Blender. I mean, I've seen everything.
Yes.
So, and that's good.
I think it's fantastic.
That's the way to go, you know, is like, everyone's going to use a little bit different tool. Everyone's going to do a little different thing. And that provides diversity into the quality of work you get. If it's always the same tools, you're going to get the same artist going from group to group and always producing the same work. Right?
Yeah. And also there's this, one of the biggest advantages for us artists is the fact that it creates more, not a competition, but it's like it creates this healthy competition between companies to improve the tools.
Sure.
You know, so like, I want to make my render faster, you know.
Yes.
And you know, Octane now came in, and we've like the all the GPU based rendering, you know. So I think that's great. It's always, you know, have diversity is always going
to
create more.
Competition is always good. It's always going to be the good thing that makes everyone basically want to make their products better, right?
Absolutely.
So, and I'm, you know, that's the last part of capitalism that I still trust.
Yes, for sure, for
you
sure.
Know? Because the thing is, it's like, yeah, you know what? If a bunch of people make a bunch of products, people are going to buy the best one or the cheapest one or whatever is their priority.
Yeah.
And the people that are developing it need to know, like, is my priority to make it cheaper or to make it better?
Yes.
And they know that, and that's what it comes down to.
I agree. No, I agree. So it's very important for us.
Exactly. So it's a good, healthy thing.
Mm-hmm.
So you were there for 9 years, which is a long, healthy amount of time.
Yes.
And how did you leave, or why did you leave Blizzard, and what did you get involved with after that?
Well, I think it would, as part of the evolution process we talked about, after a while, I started realizing that a lot of the reference that I was always looking, we are always watching movies.
Sure.
And looking at movies and buying the art of.
The art of.
Right. Yep. And then I started getting more familiar with the art departments from movies.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And I end up meeting a bunch of artists through Gnomon.
Uh-huh. So did you have an association with Gnomon as well?
Or? Well, I was friends with Alex Alvarez, and he was kind enough to invite me one day to one event at his house, where there was a lot of the art department guys like Ben Proctor, Dylan Cole, and I by that time I already knew who they were, and when I got there, I was like, oh my god, you know, shaking hands with everyone that I really admired.
Sure.
And, you know, say, oh man, I love your work. And I met all those guys, and I was very surprised. And Ben Proctor turned to me. He's like, oh, you work with Blizzard. Do you know who worked on that cinematics with the Marine being assembled? And I was like, oh yeah, I work heavily on that with the rest of the team, of course, you know. And he paid huge compliments. Just like, that was one of the coolest cinematics I ever seen.
He's such a cool guy.
He's amazing.
So
and he inspired me to do what I do nowadays.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I talked to, when I met Ben when he was still at Pixel Liberation Front. So that So he was doing Previs back then.
Yes. That's how he started.
Yeah, he started as an artist at PLF, which I don't know if he started there, but he definitely, that's where I met him. And he was really cool. He's just a good guy. And then suddenly, you know, he contacted me. He's like, I'm leaving, because I've always talked to him when I was trying to figure out how to get into VFX. This is before I was even in VFX, right? I was still in architecture at the time.
Yeah.
And he was just talking to me a little bit. And he says, yeah. It's like, I'm thinking about leaving VFX. I mean, he was just tired, right? He just like didn't want to do it. And he was too good, to be honest.
Uh-huh.
And so he got into he said, I left VFX. I'm now working for the art department. And it's a completely different life. Right.
Yeah.
And now I have, you know, I'm part of the art department guild. I've got a whole different lifestyle.
I'm so glad that happened. You know.
And Ben as a designer is huge. And then suddenly he flourished. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, it was immediate because he deserved that kind of recognition.
Mm-hmm.
But what was interesting to me specifically about his career, and hopefully he'll be here on the podcast at some point, is the fact that it was the first time I started seeing art department stuff that was like hardcore CG.
Yeah.
A lot of the other guys, even some of the Dylan Coles and Sengs and those guys, were a little bit more hand-drawn and stuff.
Much more nice.
Yeah. They were done on the computer and stuff, but Ben was like, no, I'm going to model the shit out of this thing.
Yeah.
And I'm going to show you what Transformers looks like in full CG.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what it was, the first time that I saw CG being used in that sense.
Right.
And it was a shock to me because it was like, oh man.
And that,
you know,
is not traditional.
No.
And I'm sure the art department probably freaked out when they saw that.
Yeah, I have to talk to Ben about that, actually, ask about that transition for him. But because you still have those things, for example, okay, you know, 3D is not really 2D, you know,
right.
and you know, some people have different opinions about using that for concept design.
Sure.
Which to me is one more tool, you know,
right.
Like I think you have to use the power of 2D when it makes sense, and 3D makes a lot of sense in some cases.
Right.
But I found some of that resistance in depending on the show you're going to work with.
Yeah.
It's like, oh yeah, this director doesn't really like 3D, you know, so you have to do more Photoshop.
Sure.
And some other directors like, yeah, functional 3D, just that's it's all good. Just show how you how
show
it works.
How
he's gonna love
work.
It.
Yep.
Exactly. So, you know, it really depends. But I would love to hear from him how was that transition to him. But essentially what happened when I saw his portfolio, I was like very impressed with the amount of 3D he was
right.
using. And it clicked when I saw it. I was like, that's what I wanna do.
You and basically like someone like that's like, oh, I can just go
yeah.
right into that.
Yeah, because then I realized, I was like, you know, by this time, I figured out that I love doing much more design than being in the in a production pipeline.
Sure.
So to me, it was pretty awesome to see someone doing that and using that full potential and using Photoshop on the top is like doing everything that you can just to
yep.
convey a design.
As fast as possible.
As fast as possible, exactly.
Right.
But and at the end of the day, you still have like a mesh that will have proportions and things like that, and that's what is useful in a lot of the pipelines. So,
yeah, it's a different way of thinking because, I mean, obviously a lot of the guys who are like sitting there sketching, they got to think about perspective, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
You already have that all figured out. There's an advantage doing 3D. You can
yeah.
build it and then add to it.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really cool part of the 3D design is that the all that is correct, and which some people can think is a cheating, but to me it's more like depending.
Why is it cheating, though?
I heard that before, but no.
I mean, actually, what's the argument about cheating?
It's the fact that you're not like really crafting something with your own hand. But to me, is I think that's it's all
but
part
you
of.
But you are. You used
right.
your hand.
I use my mouse, right?
You use your mouse. Yeah. I mean, what's the difference?
But
to
me, this is the thing. Like, I sketch a lot before I actually model anything.
Sure.
And actually with Ben now, I actually show a lot of my sketches to him. We do some really quick napkin drawings about what are we going to work on, and which is extremely helpful. And what I do is just take that and just do a more elaborate design.
Sure.
So, but to me, I think every transition period goes has this kind of you know, how can I put that in a nice way? It's like some people be resistant to change sometimes. Like for example, when Photoshop came out, you have a lot of people that never did Photoshop and didn't want to paint in a computer to be like, oh man, in Photoshop you're gonna undo things. It's like that's cheating. You know what I mean? That happened
right.
back in the day. So I think
yep.
every kind of new technology, because I foresee in the future, if you're maybe doing hologram design, some people will be like, oh, I remember modeling the mouse. That was really art. You know what I mean?
Yeah, of course.
So I think
that's the whole problem. Is like, you know, the thing is that I have a resistance to is the fact that people it's like, oh, it's so much better in the old day or whatever that argument is.
Yeah,
and. It's wrong.
To me,
ZBrush, as an example,
yeah.
ZBrush is a sculpting tool.
Absolutely.
And it is a sculptor's
yeah.
tool. And there's nothing, you can't say it's a, you can't say it's like, it's cheating of sculpting. No, it's not. You just gave the power of sculpting to an unbelievable degree and let the person create.
Yeah, I think that, to me, I think the everyone that is very successful that I met in my life and I read books about it are people that can adapt really fast
yeah.
to things. Because guess what? It's going to happen anyways.
Yeah.
Either you like it or not. You can sit and be very angry about it and not evolve, or you
sure.
just embrace it. Embrace what's changing, embrace what's happening,
yeah,
and,
exactly.
and adopt and try to be good at it.
I'm sure
know?
If Sid Mead was around, you know, like was born, you know, 50, 60 years later,
oh, yeah.
he'd be just all over that shit.
Oh,
right?
yeah. You know,
yeah.
you have Daniel Simon that is an amazing
yep.
designer
yep.
in vehicles, and he uses Alias, I believe,
yeah.
largely to design his cars and
yep.
everything, and it's beautifully done.
Yep.
Yeah, the foreword of his book was done by Sid Mead.
Yes.
Just so there's a lot of respect
I know,
there,
exactly.
and it doesn't really matter.
Sid Mead knows where art and art is. I mean, I was at Trojan Horse was a Unicorn last year.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, which was great. I love it. It was one of my favorite events. I can't wait to go this year.
Oh, you're going this year. I was invited. Unfortunately, conflicted with my schedule.
Well, you chose wrongly.
I know.
You chose wrongly, my friend, because I'll tell you, it's going to be an awesome event.
Yes, I know.
Yeah.
I feel very sorry that I can make it, you know. And
I will let Andre know that you feel sorry.
So. Oh yeah, well, I told him many times. Yeah. He knows how I feel about it.
Yeah. But yeah, no, it is a fantastic event. But I remember Sid when he was there, and you know, and he painted in gouache, right? So he designed amazing things mm-hmm. in gouache. The gouache didn't make the designs beautiful.
Of course not. He was,
he designed Tomorrowland out of his mind, not in gouache.
Absolutely,
right?
Yeah.
And so, but yes, it was way more challenging to do it in gouache than it would have been to do it in Photoshop, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm sure he would have been like, oh my God, if I had Photoshop, it would have been...
Well, I think you can think
his
of...
His brain could have downloaded faster, right?
Probably, yeah.
It's just like, you know, anything else.
I think that every artist, I think you have to practice your basic skills always, like drawing, right. Trying to sketch. I think those basics, I don't think will ever go away.
No.
Doing sketches on the paper, I love that. And I think that's a really good way to do it.
It's not a replacement because that's how like...
It's one more part of this. It's one step
yes.
on the whole thing, you know, right. And I've seen guys that are amazing 2D designers that they can do like 9 variations. I work with Ed Natividad, which is mm-hmm. an amazing concept guy, purely 2D, and I work with him on Transformers.
Yes.
And I saw the stuff he does in 2D, and it's just fantastic, right? And that's he masters that. That really cool sketch, but it's like well explained, and you believe it. But, you know, everyone is using their own strength. But to me, it's like you have to know what your strengths and weaknesses are. And then when you apply your process around that, mm-hmm. you know, it's like how I can convey my vision using what I have. You
right.
know? Because at the end of the day, in concepting, that's what it is. And it's amazing because I was much more 3D heavy back in the day. And nowadays, after working with Ben and Dylan and... You know, and John Park and David Levy mm-hmm. and Steve Massey and Joe mm-hmm. Pepe, right? That's the avatar.
Those are your guys, yeah.
Yeah, and working with them, like I learned way more about the using Photoshop to combination,
right?
And it's just very powerful.
So let's go back a little bit because I know we went a little tangent talking
sure.
about concept art and how that transition was. Because to me, that's a huge thing that's I think important for people to know.
Absolutely,
making the transition from being a 3D artist to being an artist, right? Or a concept artist. Like,
yeah.
I have to come up with this stuff in my head and
yeah.
it makes a big transition. But when you've started to have that realization that everything you knew about being a 3D artist mm-hmm. could suddenly apply
yeah.
to a higher level.
Absolutely. And it was an amazing realization. And at the same time, I had to give up a lot of things that being a modeler requires. For example, making a very clean mesh, mm-hmm. never using booleans, and applying UVs, unwrap UVs everywhere, like that's just not possible in a concept design world. You have to be dirty per se as far as like creating
yeah.
things that are just, you know, it's just gonna be it's called dirty modeling, where you're just gonna do things that are gonna look some way. Sometimes I have like mesh collapsing on each other in Photoshop. I painted
not making it production ready.
Exactly. But I gave presentations talking about this, and a lot of people that are modelers, they tell me, dude, I could never do that. I'm just like, that's why I don't think you're ever going to be able to design using 3D, because you need to let that go 100%
mm-hmm.
because it's a different thing. You have to think of yourself of more of a designer and not so much like creating the geometry itself. You know,
right.
it's a different thinking, you know, and making everything clean for a production has huge value, but it's a different application in a different time.
It takes longer too.
Oh, absolutely.
And you don't have that kind of time.
No, you don't. No. It's depending on the production you are, you're gonna have to create a lot of designs and complex designs. When I was working on Transformers, and I was actually working directly with Michael Bay for a while, and you know, he was...
And he's sitting over your shoulder, and it's like, hold on, let me clean up this mesh a little bit.
Impossible. Yeah, so he would ask, like, yeah, I want to do this, that. So I had to come up with, like, all the shortcuts that I knew in order to make that possible.
Right.
Know? So that's the kind of thinking that it has to go into.
Now, do you have all whole kinds of special tools that you've done to make that happen? Do you know, like, oh, yeah.
Well, through all this concept in career, I started developing kits, you know, mm-hmm. like geometries and things that I build up and actually accumulate.
Right.
And actually I come back to older models and I break them apart and I create individual files. I use a plugin called Project Manager mm-hmm. in Max, which is genius for you to have the thumbnails. You save files individually in a Max scene. And then when you open it with Project Manager, mm-hmm. you can drag that image directly. It's almost like that Modo. Modo has this where you see the thumbnails of the models.
Yep.
It's the same thing.
Okay.
So, and I create, and I end up like accumulating. Now I have more than like 1,000 parts, I believe.
Wow.
So that's huge.
It's just like you get a kit of parts that are like just your tools, and you're like, yeah, I'm gonna build a little bit of this, a little bit of that.
Yeah, and it's very, yeah, and I have all break up by like hydraulics and, you know, and things like structures, bolts, and
yep.
And of course, depending on the design I'm gonna do specific created for that, mm-hmm. which I can end up later saving, and that's gonna become, you know,
another part.
And right. because the other thing that I love using in Max is the symmetry modifier, where you can like change your design completely by applying a symmetry and spinning around, so that creates other things. So it's like, yeah. it's an accumulative effect that you're gonna end up like with this library. So that's one of the big things that I have for sure. I have all my Photoshop brushes set up, and I have in Max, I have all my HRI scenes that I start with, that it has the lighting all set up already. So I just bring the model and I start rendering in V-Ray.
Right.
So all the settings are saved. I'm not setting up scenes from scratch every time.
Yeah, you just dump it in. And
dump it in, exactly. Right. So all little things like that are very helpful.
Yeah. And so how did you suddenly make that transition into the art department?
Yeah, so I had an opportunity to do some work for RoboCop.
RoboCop,
yes.
the new RoboCop, right?
Yes, the new RoboCop. I end up like working on this on the silver suit, right?
Nice.
Yeah, and it was a huge honor. I was drawing RoboCop since I was when I was a kid. I was drawing my mom.
Sounds
actually.
Sounds right up your alley, right?
Yeah, but it's funny because when I was working on RoboCop and I went and I was in Brazil visiting my family, my mom gave me this folder with a lot of drawings, and I will open up. There's like tons of RoboCop drawings. Mm-hmm. I was like, that's awesome. You know, it's like I was always a big fan.
Right.
Actually, when I saw Ed 209 for the first time, I was horrified. I was just like scared. When mm-hmm. I saw it, it was so, you know, like he's present on screen back then. When I watched it the first time, it was so, there's such a huge impact. But yep. anyways, I had an opportunity to do work for RoboCop. And when I was working on RoboCop, I had to actually really force myself to learn all those techniques to cut corners and develop like fast ways to model mm-hmm. and have designs that I can change. So I have this whole workflow in Max where I have the polygon, and then I apply a shell modifier, then I apply a mesh smooth classic, and then I tuber smooth. That ends up looking like this chamfer mesh.
Mm-hmm.
But if the director wants to change part lines and recut, I come back to the lower level and I recut and come back, and it's all like live. So that's right. huge. So I had to develop all those techniques to be able to do quick iterations to show the art director.
Right.
What I wanted to do in.
So it was a new experience for you. Suddenly, you're now talking to an art director.
Yes.
And that process is way faster.
Yeah. So yeah, it was. It's definitely a different pacing. You know, mm-hmm. like the way that the movies are shot and the art, how much time in art department you have. The whole experience is very different than actually mm-hmm. making a game.
Sure.
So that's exactly why I had to kind of shape my techniques to do that, you know. So it was a good learning curve for sure.
Yeah, I remember the first time that I worked with an art department that was very 3D savvy mm-hmm. was on Tron, right? Ben and
Ben.
David. That was the first time I met Ben. I mean, well, the first time I actually worked with Ben
mm-hmm.
and David Levy was the first time I met him. And it was a very unusual thing because basically they gave us their dirty mesh, right?
Yes.
They're like, well, here it is. And like, okay, well, at least we have something to start with as opposed to a sketch and we have to guess, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's like, there's some scale we can apply, and yes, it's not the cleanest mesh, et cetera, but we have an idea of where things are.
Yeah.
Because it's not just an image. It's a 3D thing.
Yeah. And so, you can put, right, the, you know, use that as a base for your production.
Yes.
I think it, yeah,
and,
it's helpful.
And it helped a lot. It helped a lot. It was the first time that, like, literally the art department was working at the company. So they were working at the Digital Domain. They had their own floor and everything else, and they were separate. But they could communicate directly with the modeling and you know, the team directly. It's like, okay,
that's awesome.
Here's the idea. Here's what we did. And in fact, when I worked on the light bike sequence, David Levy sat next to me, and he was showing me what he thought the stadium was going to be and what the lighting was going to be. He's like, all right, well, you know, I was designing the lighting for the thing. It's like, and I worked directly with him. It was the first time I was like, this is the way it should be.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's the best way, because
the
you keep the vision.
Yeah.
You maintain the vision up to the end.
Yeah, because I was actually working on shots and they were still designing the stadium, right? Mm-hmm. So we're like, what's the stadium going to look like? I don't know. And like, and we came up with this, and then David's like, let me come up with something. And like, suddenly this dynamic between the art department and the CG department was amazing.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And we were looking, it's like, okay, well, we need, you know, it's too vast a space on Tron. We need some kind of a light system to put over the bikes.
Mm-hmm.
And we originally thought we're going to have it in there, but it didn't look weird. But, and then we designed a light system to put over the bikes that does not actually in the scene. So it was only visible in reflection.
Oh, nice.
Just to give it a sense of
speed,
right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And so he designed these lights, and we called them the Trino flows, as opposed to the Kino flows and the Tron flows, right?
The Trino flows.
And so there's like these weird kind of light designs that he made. He's like, let's do something like this. And he made it in 3D, like in like, you know, half an hour or something like that, because that's the way art department is working.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. And it's like, Trican is like, just do a render like that, flat, and I'll figure out how to make a light out of it. And it just, it was beautiful just to work so closely with that idea, where I can focus on the other stuff and the art department can do that, but we collaborated.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and that's the way it should be.
Also, I agree.
I mean, Tron is like the perfect movie to do that on, obviously.
So CG heavy. And,
so CG heavy and et cetera, et cetera. But I think it was really beautiful, the idea of collaborating and working on the same within the same tools at the same time.
That's amazing. Yeah. And especially David Levy, that he's such a, you know,
such a collaborator, right?
Such a collaborator.
Yeah.
Amazing, super
and
sweet
no
guy.
Ego
so
and just like,
not at all.
No, right.
Yeah. I'm very thankful that I, you know, have the opportunity to work with him.
I mean, how much can you talk about what you're working on right now? You can talk about a little bit?
I'm
you can't tell me what you're doing, but can you talk about the project you're actually working on?
I believe I can. We can talk about the project that I am and who I work with and things like that, and then I will touch base with Ben and ask him, is like, can I actually, and if not, I will just let you know. Definitely I'm part of the Avatar
right,
sequels,
and you're over at Lightstorm, right?
Over at Lightstorm,
and so that's that. And I saw you and David and Ben there, and you guys are heavily working on that. I didn't see a single thing that you guys worked on, because that's fine, it's normal. But I know you guys are working very hard on that process, and you've been working on it for a long time. It's a huge project. That must be a very unusual thing as well, because obviously that is also a very CG heavy show.
Yeah.
Do you feel there's collaboration going on there?
Well, right now it's so early that
it's too early.
It's
right?
too early, and you know, I haven't actually experienced that much of that collaboration. But I'm sure it's going to happen, because there's so much stuff that content is created by us.
Right.
So, I think that's going to end up happening regardless.
So yeah, so those a big project like that must be big, right?
Yeah. Well, the one huge collaboration I had experience with was working with ILM on Transformers.
Okay.
Because actually the Digimed department at ILM is 3ds Max and V-Ray.
Yes, they are.
Yeah, which is a lot of people are not aware of it.
They do now a little bit.
But it's very interesting, like, for example,
they actually don't call it the Digimed department anymore.
Oh, no, they don't.
They don't, because they do way more than Digimed.
Yes, they do. They are fantastic.
So they call them the generalist department.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Because they do a bunch of, like, I don't know how we can do this. Let's just hand it over to these guys.
Yeah.
It's like the one-off department.
Right? Yes, and they do fantastic. And actually what happened is, because I was working on all those huge alien ship shots, like the whole ship environment for the last
the Age of Extinction Transformers, right? And I had to develop all that in Max, and then I started talking to Richard Bluff at and ILM, and I was under the impression that I would have to send everything in FBX, and it's like, oh no, we use Max and V-Ray here. It's like, perfect. The only thing I had to do is archive from Max and send the models there.
Yeah.
And they were extremely heavy, but the ILM guys were just super great to work with, you know.
Yep.
They just like, yeah, just send us, we're gonna figure out, you know, and it was awesome. Yeah. So that was a huge collaboration for sure.
Yeah. They do a lot of pretty interesting work. I mean, I know they've done well, because we work very heavily with them, obviously. ILM uses a bunch of V-Ray licenses, and we work very heavily with them, specifically that department, as well as some other ones. But they're always like, yeah, you know, we'll just figure it out.
Yeah.
You know, which is a very cool thing to hear, especially in light of the departments, the older school VFX places that are not necessarily like, well, no, we've got a department for this, we've got a department for that, we've got a department for this.
Yeah.
Those guys, the generalist department, are like, we'll just figure it out.
Yeah. I believe they must be like a smaller department, so I think
they're smaller, but they do a lot of work.
Oh, yeah. When I saw what they did with what I generated, they basically took what I did and just made it like 14 million times better.
Right.
And I was just like, because when I was doing those environments on Transformers, I look at it and I'm like, dude, this is a lot of polygons. So I remember some scenes combined of all my XRAFs in Max, they had like 300 million polygons, right?
Yeah.
And I was just like, Jesus, that's a lot of stuff. And then when I went saw the shots that they had, I was just like, way more.
Yes.
And of course, they have their own pipeline. And,
sure.
But very impressive
the
how much they did.
The stuff that I saw them do on Pac Rim was insane.
Yeah.
And a lot of that was V-Ray and Max. You know, a lot, some of it was Arnold, et cetera.
Arnold,
but,
yeah.
But the environments was ginormous, and they just did the whole thing, you know. Enormous amount of work was done in that.
They must have some pretty crazy render farms there with V-Ray.
They do, and or they also are smart about just using proxies or whatever that's going to do, you know.
For sure.
The Lone Ranger stuff is insane. The entire train sequence is like almost all CG, right? The
environment. Oh, I didn't know that. It's awesome.
The environment, it's like trees, mountains, everything, like a huge amount, and they just did it with, like, you know, off the shelf tools. I think they used Speed Tree or something like that.
That's
and just
awesome.
Max proxies, just bang that's it amazing. Out, you know, just do it, do it, do it. Just
do they request tools from you guys? Sorry, I'm gonna start asking questions
now. No, it's okay.
Yeah,
Of course, they do. I mean, everyone does, and they're not the only ones, but everyone does, and you know, and we work really closely with them on a lot of stuff.
I think that's very smart, because that's when you actually start developing the tools that are actually needed.
But to the point, like, you know, I mean, the Digimat department works with us so much, and we've become very familiar and very friendly with them, that they were doing a bunch of stuff on the first Captain America with us. And they were like, you know what, you know, we want to try to use V-Ray across the board on this. They'd already sort of started looking at Katana. And so we work with them very closely in the first early stages of V-Ray for Katana.
That's fantastic.
So they knew, they're like, oh, we have the shaders.
Uh-huh.
In Max.
Yeah.
And we just got to translate it to Katana, and use the same things. And so that it all looks the same, and it all comes out of the same rendering engine, which is great. So we work very closely with them
in
terms of that, and we continue to do that. So we have got a very good relationship with that. And the thing is, you know, V-Ray, I mean, I always joke about it. It's like, we put it in anything, right?
Yeah.
So like, we'll put it in Angry Birds if we could.
That's awesome.
So it makes it very, very, you know, easy sort of to collaborate. And we also, you know, Vlado is very always kind about trying to make sure that he works with people about kind of stuff. So
no, I think you guys are doing a fantastic job so far.
Well, thank you.
All the choices of, you know, how you guys market yourself.
And I know that, like, you know, a lot of you guys over there at Lightstorm are using V-Ray as well, and a bunch of that. And even Ben, who's still holding on to Soft Dimash, the poor guy, I feel sorry for him. But, you know, he's, and it's fine. I mean, that there's a lot of things that are going on that are going to make your stuff look really great. And we want to make sure that we are still very much present in that early concept stage.
Yeah.
Especially in the idea of, I just got to get something done fast, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So that's an important part of the, you know, just like you're saying, You got to do dirty modeling. Sometimes you got to do dirty shading and dirty rendering.
At the same time, one thing that I didn't mention that is very important, I have my library of parts, but I also have my, at this point, like 100 plus shaders that are all pre-built.
Yeah.
All saved in Max. It's like, I have divisions of like synthetic and metals and, you know, same concept, like all pre-made, because at the end of the day, it's like...
You just got to be able to drop it in.
You have to drop it in, yeah.
You're not going to design metal 17 times.
Yeah. We'll be, are you guys ever planning to have like a couple things pre-made with the package you guys release?
No comment on that.
Okay.
Because actually, there's some very interesting things we're doing.
Awesome.
Which could be good or there's some interesting things we're doing. on your side of things, you're like, oh, that'd be great, but maybe I need this, and at which point we'll go, yes, of course that is, and then we'll introduce that. But
gotcha.
We're looking at a lot of very interesting tools to allow you to basically drop in something and look exactly correct the way you want it to be.
Nice. That's cool.
So, we've offered different things like VizMats and stuff like that. And there are tools, there are places out there like vray-material.de, I think, is a German company that makes a bunch of materials, right?
Yes. I downloaded a bunch of those.
Yeah, and those are pretty good. I like them. The only problem I have with a lot of those sites, and they're all very good materials, is that they're not necessarily built for a specific color workflow, right? Because I like to work in linear.
Yes.
And so if that's built not linearly, then I got to mess it all up and like try to convert it.
Also, the other thing that I found with those shaders that you download is like a lot of times it's just, it really is like some people just wanted the perfect, really clean material. So samples on the shader are like 64. So you have to go through all the reflection slots and like reduce, which is not a big deal, but you have to rebalance everything.
Okay, this is a good thing. We should talk about this because Vlado put out a video recently about his what he does when a client gives him a scene that renders slowly.
Oh, nice.
And he says, this is what I do almost 90% of the time to solve the problem, right?
Yeah.
So as an example, specifically, like you said, everyone sets their reflection samples too high or something weird like that. So he has his global settings that he knows specifically in version 3, because version 3 has changed a few things that makes it faster, but you have to be aware of what it is, especially something called the shading rate. But what he does to eliminate the problem of all the random subdivisions on all the different things is he takes the V-Ray subdivision multiplier that's in the globals and turns that to 0.
Nice.
So that everything is turned off.
That's
on all
cool.
The shaders, all the lights, everything. Yeah, basically, everything gets multiplied to 0 and all the sampling happens in one universal way, which just basically eliminates most of the problems.
Most of the issues. That's awesome. Yeah, that's a really good way of troubleshooting for sure.
Yeah, so it's really a cool little video. I actually should post that up there.
Yeah,
so people see it.
I think that people would love to see that.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, there were certain things I was like, okay, because I've been following, you know, sort of a universal setting as much as possible. Mainly my job in VFX production is to create the best possible, especially as a lighting supervisor when I was doing that, was to create the best possible way to render that specific movie, right? And it's not always the same. Like if I'm going to render Oblivion, it's not going to be the same as Real Steel. It's different types of shaders. So I have different types of presets. But I want to give my artists the ability to just not think about the render settings and just think about the lighting that they need to do. So I have to make all the presets and I have to test it under different scenarios.
That's cool.
But I really appreciate, because I've been following that for a long time, and then I watch Vlado's video and he's like, oh, wow, V-Ray 3 changed a lot. Like,
yeah.
And it got faster in a lot of ways, but it simplified a lot of the process.
No, so. Definitely the speed is something that I realized too, especially when you use Embry, when you turn it on static, and you know when you change those two settings.
Yeah, and I know you guys have been playing around with a little bit of GPU rendering as well.
Yes,
And that was like that, you know, if and it's changing every day. I know some of the, you guys were still in the early days where not all the settings were there, not all the shaders were there. But
yeah, I send my feedback for like, you know, wanted to use dirt and, you know.
Which is available now, by the way.
Yes, yes, absolutely. But that helps a lot.
It helps, but like, you know, if that's happening, like suddenly your speed is accelerated by 20 times.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And again, as we talked about following the tendencies and embracing new technology, that's a huge thing, you know. It's like GPU, you know, the all the cards are becoming very powerful. You have the Titan X now, which is under $1,000 and is very, very...
Which sounds like a lot of money, but it's not as much considering the $5,000 it used to cost to get a Quattro card, right?
Yeah, there you go. And the Quattros still are top of the line as far as like everything they use is higher quality, but it, you know, like you have those game cards, what do they call, which they still have a huge amount of power.
Yeah. And well, so the Titan X is basically the same, and it's actually the same amount of power as an M6000.
Yes.
And it's 12 gigs of video memory on a gaming card, and it's got everything that's available. The things that it doesn't necessarily have is some of the hardware stability safeguards on there that allows it to render 24/7, and it, you know, certain other driver issues. But besides that, it's a freaking crazy card, and it's $1,000, which sounds like a lot of money, but considering the computational power that that card has,
it's amazing.
It's huge.
Yeah. So I think taking advantage of that side of, you know, is a new tendency as well to me. I think we have to all look, you know, be very aware of what that's happening.
All right. So, well, cool. Well, how long have you been on the project you're working on now, and how much longer do you have? You said it's still early, but I know you've been on there for at least a year.
Yes, a year, 1 year, 4 months. Yeah, yeah. But I'm not sure. It's hard to say how long I'll be in the project. But it all depends on release dates and all this. But I'm actually really happy to stay as long as I can, because the team that I work with, they're just really talented, fantastic guys. And
you get to design and do things every day, right?
Yeah. So yeah, it is my for sure dream job. And you know, and I keep that in mind, and I cherish every day, because you know you have to remind yourself.
Are you officially part of an art department guild and everything else?
Absolutely.
So you made that transition, and you were able to sort of be part of that.
I'm part of the union. I'm part of the guild, and you know, like since I start the first project, like officially working in the union was working on Transformers, and since then I'm part of our department. And after that, I worked on the next Star Wars, Star Wars 7.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. Yeah, I did.
Wow. How long were you working on Star Wars 7?
I believe for 8 months.
Wow.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, and then after Star Wars, I was invited to go to Avatar.
Oh, okay, great. Well, those are obviously great projects. I mean, so you could not have been. You're looking at yourself like, how did this happen to me?
Exactly. You
know,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I know what that feeling is. It's like,
I'm always that way. I mean,
it's very clear from your work that it fits very perfectly into everything that's going on.
Really, really appreciate that.
I'm excited about it. And I'm really glad, like, suddenly someone said, oh, we should get Fausto on. It's like, well, I know Fausto. I should totally get Fausto on the podcast.
I'm very honored. Yeah. I've been using V-Ray for such a long time, and you know, I love, you know, everything about the software and how you guys, you know, interact with users and everything. Yep. So it's like to be here and talking to you, and the fact that people requesting me is a huge honor for sure.
Great. I'm really excited. Well, we're just about an hour. Actually, we're just over an hour, which is perfect. This is the great perfect length for a podcast.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you want to tell people or get people excited about?
Well, actually, I recently released a project online, which is all done in V-Ray.
Yeah.
It's an ebook.
You were telling me about that.
Yeah. So it's an ebook experience, and I basically started developing a whole universe. And I have a story, and it's like an open-ended thing, because what I wanted to do is like create this huge canvas for designing cool stuff that I love, and actually having some sort of story actually being carried in this universe. So you can check it out if you want. It's fdm-edge.com.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and you can check it out. Like, there's a free version that you can use. It's called Flipbook.
Okay.
Paperflip, sorry. That you click on it, and it basically opens up an app that you can actually read as a book. Oh, online.
Okay. Well, send me a link.
Yeah.
And what we'll do is on the podcast page, we'll put a links on the bottom.
That's awesome. And yeah, I can send you a couple images too, because I have that on the website.
Absolutely. Yeah. Send me images. Send me anything like that. And I always like to do a little gallery sometimes of stuff that is going on. And I also know that you send me some super high-res images as well.
Yeah.
Which I'm getting printed. They're arriving in a few days.
That's awesome.
And they'll be in our office. I love to have artwork in our office as you saw when you walked in.
I'm super, super happy for that shit.
And we're going to be putting it up at SIGGRAPH as well. So we'll have a few prints of your work as well as SIGGRAPH.
That's amazing.
Your mech guy looks great. I'm printing him out, really big.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you so much.
As well as the loading dock stuff that you were showing. So
yeah, that loading dock is for the project itself, right? Like for Edge. So
cool.
So anyway, so I the whole project was it's like a dream of mine to have a book being done, and having an ebook was a format that to me was like
very logical
because
it's also interactive, right?
It's interactive. Yeah. There are ton tables you can click on, and you can see the model spinning in some of the pages.
Oh, really?
And also there's a panorama that you can actually check. One of the models that I did is, like, is a satellite in space, basically, that you can look around, because I created all that in render with the spherical camera in view.
Oh, right.
So I tried to do the whole thing a little more interactive, and actually by not printing this right now, I think eventually going to have a special edition, which is a book.
Sure.
But not printing allows me just to be very fast about like generating the content and putting it out there.
Right.
And that's what I'm after. Yeah. So anyways.
Wow. Cool. Absolutely. That's a perfect plug, and totally love to do it. We'll put those links online. We'll let everyone know about it. I think that's about it. We got SIGGRAPH coming up soon. And obviously we've got probably a few years before any of the projects you're working on right now are out, but I'm sure people will be glad to know that we've talked to you and talked about that kind of stuff that's going on. So
absolutely,
that's really cool.
Well, thank you so much for the opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, guys.
Thanks.